Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along show.
Hello, and welcome to episode 250. Tonight's show is brought to you by Leadville is Interbike 2026 for 32-inch wheels. In terms of what I've had going on, I have nothing to report on my end. We have listener questions we need to get to, so I'm just going to shut my mouth.
All right.
Cool. Kenny, you go.
Okay. I rode my moto with a buddy. We did some pretty fun exploring. Found just some cool ass stuff. There's so much riding out here. It's unreal. We worked our way up to 10,000 feet and kind of cut our own trail in a little bit of a spot on a ridge where a trail just stopped. I say cut a trail. Like, we're riding over rocks and down trees and stuff. We're not like, you know, we're not ruining.
Fucking shooting polar bears.
We're not ruining shit. Yeah, we weren't. They weren't clubbing baby seals and stuff out there. But it was pretty cool. Found a really high alpine.
You guys have seals in Utah?
We do, yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, they're everywhere. Anyway, just cool
like
stuff.
Neil the Seal.
Yeah, that guy's cool. He's pretty famous. Is that in Australia?
I can't remember.
So. I think it's New Zealand.
Oh, I think you're right. I think it's New Zealand.
Tasmania. They're different places. I think Tasmania is the one.
Not sure. Somewhere over there.
If only we had a computer device. I'll find out where Neil the Seal is.
Pretty sure it's New Zealand. But regardless, just rode my motorcycle. It was fun. Still riding the Husky.
Tasmania.
Oh, damn. Wrong as shit. Andrea, keeping up with current events and geography. I am contemplating going down to one motorcycle. Not sure yet. I don't really have to, but I just don't really ride the Ultra B much anymore. Because I've just been doing the longer rides and riding with a bunch of other gas people. And as I get more comfortable with the bike, I enjoy it a lot. So I think the Ultra is still really cool. Still great bike. Super glad I owned it. Highly recommend anybody out there in listener land. If you want to get into the moto world, probably smart. Start on some type of e-moto. Do that for a couple of years. And then if you decide to work your way up, great. Do that. But yeah, I don't know. Ultimately, I'd still like to have two or three motorcycles in general. You know, I'd kind of like to have an ADV bike, like a bigger one where I could do a little bit of street use on it. But then I'm also thinking about like a mid to lightweight ADV bike, like a, you know, one of those CF Moto 450s or a KTM 690. Those are supposed to be really rad, especially the new ones. Just like bicycles, there's a lot of really rad motorcycles out there. And then if I do that, do I like get rid of my 350 four-stroke, get a 300 two-stroke? I don't know.
Hell yes.
I really like my 350 four-stroke. It's been extremely reliable. It just works. I don't know. I like it.
Kenny, I'm going to come out there and let you ride the 250 two-stroke, and it's going to blow your dick off.
Nah, it has a clutch. I can't operate that thing.
Oh, my God. Wait, do you still have your SV?
I do, yeah. I need to sell it.
Does it work?
No.
Is it ever going
to? No. So it's either going to go to somebody on KSL, which is the Utah Craigslist, for like $800 as is project bike. It does start and run at this point. I've done that much work to it, but it just needs so much more TLC and it still needs more carb work and all that stuff. Or I just part
the
whole thing out.
Was that the one that had frozen?
Yeah, it had just water in it because it was a race bike and then it froze and it ruined the engine. So I glued all those freeze plugs back in and it kind of works maybe. Yeah. But that's all I got. Motorcycles are neat. There's a lot of them and I want all of them. I've owned a lot of motorcycles up till now and I will own a lot more motorcycles.
Tell me about it, brother.
All right. What you got, Andrea?
Oh, well, last week I was in Leadville. And to those of you who... The hundreds of you who have let me know that last week's file uploaded as a mostly empty audio file starting at like 53 minutes in the show, I fixed that within about half an hour of hearing about it. I don't know what happened with our online editing program, but somewhere in the process of exporting from that program to our podcast host site, it just, for whatever reason, lost that file, and when I just went and uploaded the file directly to the host, everything was fine, and you should be able to re-download it through whatever podcast listener you're using and listen to the whole episode.
So is there just less King. Is there just less editing and more dead space and ums and stuff?
The dead space is gone, but there's more ums.
Gotcha.
Which Kenny doesn't that much. Matt does it the most. I definitely do it some, but I wasn't in last week's episode, so you have like, I don't know, half of the ums that you would normally have from an unedited full episode.
What about all the racial slurs? Do those get taken out?
No, those stay in.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, Kenny, they're on to you. But, so I was here last week. Last week's highlights included doing recabling a headset routed Orbea, and that was, hey, it wasn't really that bad. It was, just took a long time. And also, I think the owner had put it, he'd done like a frame swap himself or something. I don't know the exact story. I don't always get the full story when I get here, but a lot, I had to like comb over the bike for stuff that had been messed up in the frame swap.
By the way, that's the worst thing in the world. Like all the people out there in listener land, I know everybody here on the show for the most part is pretty DIY savvy. That's probably why they listen to the show. But if you're a tiny bit DIY savvy and you decide to, for example, like I'm gonna put this crank in this frame before I drop it off at the bike shop to do the rest of the build, just don't fucking do that at all, because all your fucking spacers are going to be wrong. And I'm not going to know it until I get like deep into it. And I'm like, why the fuck is this wrong? And then I got to go reverse engineer your shit. So doing it halfway is worse than just not doing it at all. I'd rather just give us all the parts and let us figure it out. Please don't
build the bike half.
It's going
to cost you
the
same either way.
Well, I'm probably going to charge you more. And someone will say like, oh, I did all this stuff for you. It's like, great, you've actually made me angry, and now I'm going to charge you more money. Don't do it.
Well, it's funny you mentioned the crank, because this one had a Shimano mountain bike crank in it. And I noticed, you know, when I was done with all the cable routing and I'm checking things over, the little plastic safety catch on the non-drive side was sticking up.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of pushed on it, couldn't get it to go down. Well, it had this aftermarket alloy, what should be like a little plastic, basically it works like your headset. So you have two bolts on the crank arm that pinch your crank spindle. That little safety catch goes in there for safety. And you use a little pre-tension thing that works like your headset cap. It doesn't need to be super tight. It just needs to pull the non-drive side arm into position, and then you tighten the pinch bolts to keep it on. Well, this had this big alloy cap with like an Allen, like an 8mm Allen in it.
Oh,
like,
what
fuck.
A bad
this
idea. Person that must have thing like, was over-torqued like a motherfucker.
Well, that wasn't actually the problem. That was over-torqued. Like, it was on too tight, but it wasn't like, it wasn't like a normal, you know, like a dub crank where it's 54 newton meters or whatever it is.
It should be like 1 newton meter on that. It's a plastic thing, and it has the factory setup is a thumb wheel.
Yeah, so it was a little over torqued, but that wasn't the problem. Luckily, I had opened up Orbea's, what they call like their blue papers for this bike, to show me where the cables are supposed to route through the frame and stuff, and I'm looking over it, and it turns out, so Shimano bottom brackets ship with some 2.5mm spacers, and depending on the width of your bottom bracket shell, you use one or two on the drive side. With the Orbea frame, you don't use those spacers. You use their special 3.5mm spacer, and that was not on the bike. It had two Shimano spacers on there, so the crank arm on the non-drive side was just not seated all the, like it wasn't on far enough for the safety catch to go down. So
what,
I had to figure that out.
What's Orbea doing over there? Why are they doing
that? I have no idea. I don't know. But that's how they made the bike. So I went through like our drawer of random, I think I used like free hub spacers. I don't even know what it was. I think it was like single speed spacers that fit on there and were, you know, like stiff enough to be stacked up and tightened up in a bottom bracket.
Yeah, that sounds right. I know back in the day we used to use those as ghetto cassette spacers.
Yeah, I think it might have been 3 millimeters. It doesn't matter. It was an in-between size, greater than 2.5 and smaller than 5. So I made the spacing right, got the crank installed correctly. But yeah, that's funny that you mentioned crank in your example, because that was like the biggest what the hell is going on here moment.
Every time, without fail, when someone brings a frame with a crank installed and they're in the process of building it, they just fucking guess on spacers. I got this big old pile of 16 spacers. I put some on both sides. I don't know. It's probably right, though. I'm like, yeah, it's fucking not. It's absolutely not, man.
The other highlight of last week was a guy that had, I think he had a crash replacement frame from Pivot. They'd sent him a new frame for whatever reason. I didn't get the entire full story from the customer. I just kind of heard like secondhand, like this guy has a new frame and this is screwed up. One of the shouldered, I don't know, it's the one like an inner race that sticks out past the whole bearing to be used as like a spacer between the trunnion shock and the shock mount, like the linkage. One of those was just installed backwards. So
jeez,
there was like a gap between the trunnion shock and the linkage, and then the bolt was tightened down against the shoulder of this bearing or the inner race of this bearing. So I had to just pop that out and put it back in the right direction. But this was like installed at the factory, the wrong direction.
No bueno.
Yep. Let's see. What have I done this week? I'm looking through pictures because I always send pictures of screwed up stuff. I think the best... I mean, there's, you know, lots of like last minute checkovers on race bikes, and those are normally pretty dialed. Like occasionally you're like, oh, this wheel bearing is like super crunchy and we're going to replace that. So, you know, this person saves 4 watts on the climbs. And, but I had one that and I've had fucking Shimano leaking brakes, are going to be the death of me. If I quit working in a bike shop, it's because I'm tired of swapping out brake levers, Shimano brake levers. I mean, it's pretty much at this point, it's like the guide lever thing, like where they would get too hot and kind of lock up because of like a tolerance issue in the lever and like, or the master cylinder, whatever it was. And now it's just Shimano brakes. Like it's just as many of those. Every single Shimano brake that comes through the door, you have to just shine a light.
It's unreal. That's exactly what I do. Yep. I just get the flashlight out. And if I see all the schmoo, I tell them, hey, I can do a bleed, but that's going to be a waste of money. It's just going to leak again. You need a new lever.
Yeah. And you know what? Matt brought this up to me when I was lamenting about it a few days ago. They make replacement diaphragms for that now for some brakes. And I haven't looked into it. They don't even have like a tech document about how to.
But I don't think the diaphragm is what's leaking. It's leaking out of the bore of the master cylinder.
Yeah, I don't know. That was just Matt's answer to my woes about Shimano brake levers. But I'm guessing it's no faster. I'm guessing it's actually slower than just replacing the lever. But I don't know.
I felt a Shigura today and it felt just as bad as a regular Magura, except worse.
Was that like a Magura lever on a Shimano caliper?
Other way around. So Magura caliper, Shimano lever.
Why would you want a Shimano lever?
Well, if you want to know what it feels like, think about having zero piston retraction because you purchased a Magura and then put a Shimano lever on it that has swing link that amplifies that.
Okay.
So if you pull the lever between 1/4 of a millimeter and 1/2 of a millimeter, it's fully engaged.
Okay. Yeah.
So I guess for all the people, and we've all heard this as bike techs, so all the bike techs out there can laugh at this. Someone's like, hey, I don't know, my buddy's bike, his brakes, they grab like right off the top. Can you like adjust mine to do that? I want there to be like no free play. They're not engaging fast enough. So if they complain about that, sell them Magura calipers with Shimano levers and be like, there you go. They're going to rub like a motherfucker, but they engage if you breathe on them.
If there's a strong wind blowing towards you, your brakes are on.
That's correct. If you're going downhill, your brakes are on.
You've got to run those little little weed protector, like moto style hand guards, because descending over 18 miles an hour, they self apply.
They felt so bad.
Okay, we need to keep moving because I'm going to get on a tangent.
Okay, and then I had one that was a leaking lever, and they need the bike, you know, by Friday. And we don't have another lever because I've already replaced like three other ones, and that we're out of levers that will fit this bike.
By the way, Shimano is pretty much eternally, not a shock at all. Shimano is almost out of every single lever, left, right, every generation, doesn't matter.
Well, so I have a lever that is not an iSpec lever, or the shifter and brake are iSpec. They're like iSpec 2, I think. It doesn't matter. So I had a lever I could put on this bike that was not iSpec, but the shifter, I didn't have any kind of a clamp to hold the shifter on the bar because the shifter just, you know, is like, it's got a bolt in the top of it, and then it's got, that bolt is attached to like a flat thing that goes under a brake lever, and the lever I'm putting on it is one of the mid-clamp style, and this is like an older one that has the clamp that goes like right next to your hand, your grip. And so I ended up cutting the clamp off of the old brake so that I could put the shifter on the on the bar. It freaking worked. Like, it worked pretty well.
Can we all I'm going to have to wait till I'm Supreme Leader, unfortunately, but discrete clamps are just going to be mandatory. I know there's going to be disagreement with this. I know everybody gets that MMX money around here, but I don't. So
I just like MMX. I mean, I like an integrated thing, but only if it's like universally integrated across every product that the company has done, which the MMX stuff is. That's one thing that SRAM is stuck with. And I think if they ever move away from that, I will boycott them as a company. I'll start running like box components or something.
If I could have four discrete clamps on either side of my handlebar, I would do it.
You can't, Kenny.
I what now?
You can definitely do that.
I know. And I want to, and I should.
Okay, cool. Let's start talking about new shit.
All right.
I want to have a double single discrete clamp. It goes to one thing, but it has two bands.
You mean like how Shimano puts a 3-millimeter wide clamp on their brake?
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah, those things were annoying as shit.
The final one was a guy that luckily he had kind of an older custom frame and some older XT trail brakes, and they were starting to leak. Like, he was just getting a little bit of like power loss on descents, and they were starting to make a lot of noise. And when I tried to extend the pistons, like only one of the one piston closest to the banjo bolt would come out and the other ones wouldn't. And so I think what was happening was his, you know, just like one little part of his pad was touching the rotor and the other parts were just kind of barely on it. So it was just howling. And he got a brand new set of like the newest XT brakes that we had in stock. And I will say, if you are a mechanic or home mechanic, bike tech, whatever, the bleed procedure for those brakes is different than previous Shimano brakes. So read the instructions, because you do a lot more at the caliper than what you used to do. And they've got multiple steps of how to get all of the air out of the caliper. And I'm glad I looked, because I wasn't going to, and I would have spent way more time trying to get the brakes to feel right, trying to get all the air out, if I had not followed their instructions.
I remember one time at Outdoors, I gravity bled a full dry Shimano.
How long did that take?
It was like an hour and a half. So I probably ruined that lever because I pulled it 10,000 times.
Yeah, you put wear on it.
I actually did. It was really stupid, but I was just curious if it was possible. Turns out it is. Don't do it. It's real dumb.
Yeah. All right. And by the way, Leadville is going to have some different times this year because of the Willow Fire, which we've talked about, right outside of town. They took one of the major climbs out of the race, the power line climb, and that is not in the race this year. They have rerouted and still 100 miles, but it is does no longer includes power line.
If I was in charge, there would be a log pull.
Of course.
It would just be on pavement. They would just hitch you up to the log, and you'd have to pull the log like, you know, a couple football fields. And that would be it. That would be in place of the power line climb.
All right. New shit?
Sure.
Yep.
What do you guys want to start with?
Factor is going to have a 32 at Leadville.
I saw
Ventum. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I saw Ventum had teased something that is either 32 or 32.29.
That bike is 100% 32.
Yeah, it looks like it in the pictures.
Yeah, I can tell by the way that it is. So.
Yeah.
There's nothing mullet about that bike.
Yeah, I mean, if you just look at the photo where, like, on Bike Rumor, they've, like, kind of stitched together the two photos of the front of the bike and the rear of the bike from, like, the Ventum social media. And, yeah, the wheels look like they're the same height. So.
There is not a 29er on the planet that has the seat tube like that either.
Yeah, that's got a gigantic gusset on it.
And look how much room there is above the bottle but below the shock, and how little space there is from the top of the seat tube. Like, the tire is so much higher than the top of the seat tube.
Yeah, yeah. I get what you're saying.
Quinn Simmons is coming. We're going to 32 it. Quinn Simmons from Trek. So Kenny and I talked last week, who from Trek is going to race a 32? I don't know if we even talked about that on air, but we looked through their factory racing, like World Cup folks, and boom, Quinn Simmons is coming. And I am 100% convinced that Trek wins no matter what. And the reason I say it is scenario one, he wins. So he did road nationals. He won the road national championship again. He went straight over to the tour. He slayed the tour and just like sat on the front and drilled it for 3 weeks in a row so Mads Pedersen could win the green jersey. And then he got the opportunity from his wonderful sponsor Trek to come and race the biggest mountain bike race on the planet, and boom, he won on the 32. I used all my fitness and boom, I won. Scenario two, everything's the same, but so thankful that I got to come race one of the coolest races in the world on the fastest bike available, but from road champs and then her road nats and then the tour, my legs just weren't there, too much fatigue, blah blah blah. Big props to Keegan. It was great to see all my homies since I've been in Europe all summer. Like, either way, Trek wins. So it's
either it's way happening. Most people don't like Quinn Simmons.
Doesn't matter. He rode his fucking ass off in the tour and just like threw down every day, and you know, he might have some political views that many people don't align with. Doesn't mean he can't pedal his bike really hard. So
that's true.
Yeah, so there's that. After the show, one of our listeners texted me and was like, there's a 32-inch bike in my garage, and you've never seen any of the wheels, tires, fork, or frame, and I'm not allowed to talk about it, but there's a racer staying with me for the race, and I can't wait for you to see it. Like, he didn't spill any beans, but it's happening. It's gonna happen. Like, this week is going to be 32 week. Like, we're 48 hours from it, and it is ridiculous. So, because think about it. If Trek shows up with their bikes, that means the RockShox forks are going to be in the public view. And if someone else shows up with a bike, it's probably going to have a Fox fork on it. And if you're riding a 32-inch wheel, you're probably not riding Nexty Carbon or the Terravelle Circus wheel.
I did one of the listener questions, just so I can cross this one off, is from Michael, and he says, FYI, the geometry charts for those 32-inch Treks was online for a bit, and the hardtail has 435 chainstays.
There's no fucking way that's going to ride well. There's just no way.
I'm just telling you.
Jesus Christ.
And I don't even remember chainstay numbers, because I haven't looked at a geo chart in a really long time. Is that obscenely short, in your opinion, for a 32? Is that the deal?
I just want chainstays to be like 450.
Gotcha.
I've ridden 430 Not my jam. I've ridden 445. That shit parties.
I want to see what my chainstays are.
Yeah, I don't even pay that much attention to it.
All right, how about the... Are we done with 32s and Leadville and stuff?
Yeah, I think so.
Crank Brothers, making a new dropper. How excited...
We have 33 different
How speeds? Excited is everybody?
Dude, I rode the last one, and that thing was... it was good.
Really?
It was.
Are you sure?
I'm very sure.
All right, that's fine.
You know what my favorite part of them is?
What's that?
They were no different than the Trans X dropper, where they just work. They're not cool. They're not... nothing about them was fancy, but you could use a bike repair stand, a pair of Knipex, and a couple of hex wrenches, and you could tear them down and put fresh slick honey in them, and by God, they just kept going.
So this seems to run a hatchback strut in it, which is fine. That's what all droppers should use.
I don't know what a hatchback strut is.
A trunk strut for a car. You know, like that little gas-charged tube that, like, holds up your little your hatch on a
tailgate.
Car? Tailgate, yeah.
It has a sealed damper or a sealed cartridge. That's what it's called. It's not a hatchback strut.
We don't
need to bring a fucking Ford Focus into
this. It is a hatchback strut because they're the same thing. You could put that in your hatchback strut. And I like that because it's just a sealed system. And when that thing dies, it's like a cartridge bearing. You take it out, you throw it away, you put a $50 one back in it. So there's two like distinct separate parts. There's no goofy seals and shit inside of the dropper. There is a wiper seal, but that's really just for the upper to the lower, and it's just the slidey slide, and that's it. So you keep the slidey slide clean, and then the actual gas juice guy inside, that's a hatchback strut. When that thing finally fucking dies, then you yank it out and you slap a new one in, and it's brand new.
So like a KS?
No. The KS is like a half cartridge, except really expensive and complicated. And then the opposite end of that spectrum, or the original Reverb, where every surface of the dropper, inside and outside, was a sealing surface, which does not work at all. So anyway, the TLDR is there's a shitload of sizes. The one cool thing I'm seeing is they make a little 60, which is freaking cool for weird fringe cases, kids' bikes, etc. So that's cool. Other than that, there's a zillion fucking sizes. And then compared to a V3 1-Up, which is what you should run, it is $20-ish cheaper, maybe. And it's 105 grams heavier and has a shitload more stack height and insertion length. So basically worse in every way, but it's $20 cheaper.
See, I hadn't opened it up and read it yet. The bigger thing that I don't like about it, more than the fact that it's within the, like you could dig around in the console of your car and like go through your change bucket and find $20. So you should never buy this. But number two,
you might even find another hatchback strut kicking around in there.
Number two, there is no reason. Like 1-Up, like Trans X is absolutely killing the dropper market right now. And I mean this with no sarcasm. Troy gave me a Trans X dropper once. Like, someone started at SRAM, it came on their bike, and he put a Reverb on it because they're a SRAM employee now and they need SRAM parts. And I was like, I'm going to try this and see what happens. That thing is still fucking working. It's still good.
You know what is also an amazing seat post is the fucking X-Fusion Manix. They are so good.
But let me tell you the best thing about the Trans X, and this is why a Trans X post should come on every bike that is sold today, is in no exaggeration, 2 minutes, I can reduce the travel by 25 millimeters. I do not have to remove the post from the frame. I do not have to remove the seat from the post.
You can do the same thing with a 1-Up V3. You just unscrew the collar and you slap the little thingies in there.
No, Kenny, this is a 100% self-contained system. You literally unscrew the collar, you just slide it up the seat post, you drop the seat a little bit, you grab the little white collar, you pick it up, you rotate it, you push it back down, you screw the collar back down.
Yeah, I mean, that is technically
nicer. I think P&W works like that also.
It is the simplest thing on the planet.
By the way, 5-minute warning.
Okay. No.
Yeah. All right. I've got one other new shit that I thought was kind of cool. It's not a huge deal, but K-Edge is making a computer mount that has the proper shape to go on the Roval, like, integrated bar and stem.
Cool.
Yeah, that's all. Kenny, you should probably get a few of those.
Yeah, probably.
Holy shit. I did not know that TransX droppers were actually sold. Do you know how much TransX dropper retails for?
$199.
$159.
Where do you buy them?
Good. I don't know.
which one of our distributors carries them?
I don't know. Why don't we start talking about the next thing and I'll figure that out.
That's my only little gripe with the X-Fusion is it's changed hands a lot on who does distribution. So getting cartridges and stuff is a little bit more challenging. BTI carries a lot of their stuff, but it can be spotty at times. But I've run two X-Fusion Manics now and they are incredible.
Also really easy to service.
And I also have a V3 1-Up, and I also have a Wolf Tooth. It's weird. Why do I have three droppers in one bike?
I don't know.
No, the Wolf Tooth is on the fat bike, and I have I had a Manic on my Kinevo, but now it's a 1-Up.
I have a conspiracy theory, since people like to hear my conspiracy theories.
Okay.
So I just saw on Bike Rumor that there's an app that's been in the past just a running app. It's called, it's one of those words where they've taken the vowels out except for the beginning. It's INTVL, kind of like interval, but without the vowels in it. It's an app where it's kind of like a competitive thing. You make a loop and then, people claim territory on the app's map by completing these loops. And so it can be competitive, like trying to claim territory on a map by now. It was a running only thing and now they've added bikes to it. And I saw the last sentence. If interval sounds like fun to you, check the link for more details. It's free to play with no subscription needed. Hit the link below and download the app now. This sounds like it's just a data gathering app. Like, nothing's free.
What do you think Strava is?
Well, yeah, but the Strava also has, like, features that you would pay for. So, I'm not saying it isn't.
Not at first, it didn't.
Yeah, I know. I mean, look, I'm not saying that Strava is not also that. I'm just reminding people, if something is free, then you are what's being sold. Like, that company has to make money somewhere. So somewhere in that privacy agreement that you just kind of glaze over and hit the agree button, it says we're going to sell all of this to marketing people or, I don't know, the government or something like that. Just a reminder, nothing's free.
Yeah, that's why I put my credit card number in my profile on Strava.
That's a good idea.
So that they use it. If you're curious, right. The Kinevo SL chainstay is $450.
As God intended.
And in fact, the S3 has the longest chainstay length of them all by 0.3 millimeters.
That's weird.
Mm-hmm.
Listener question time.
We've got a bunch of listener questions.
Start going.
So I'm going to start at the bottom. So some of these are a little old, but from Mason, he says, hey, gang, I have a few questions. I have a Rebel Ranger V2 in size large with I9s, 1-of-1 trail, and a Pike 130. I'm 5'10" and weigh 180-ish. It is the first short travel MTB I've had in a decade, so I love how efficient it is, but I have a few complaints. I'm trying to figure out if I need a different bike or if I should change my setup. First, I've always felt like I'm riding on top of the bike rather than in it. My 2020 Kona Process 153 CRDL is much happier cornering and when it comes to navigating tech. Second, the rear shock bottoms out constantly. Even when I'm preloading to bunny hop something, I set my sag at 25%. I have the stock SID Ultimate off for a full service at the moment, but I'm not sure that will fix anything.
Yeah, I know what the fix there is. You need to keep that off the bike.
So do I just not like the Rebel platform, or should I be getting a different shock and running volume spacers and dropping my fork travel? If it's any help, I live in Louisville, Kentucky. Our trails tend to be on the natural tech side of things with tight corners, punchy climbs, and lots of roots and rocks.
Why would you want to reduce the fork travel?
I don't know. Oh, and he says, he sent another one. Shoot, I forgot something. I meant to ask you guys if you had any weird bike parts and brackets or even tools you want designed. I'm a senior industrial designer, and I like to mess with bikes on the side. If you think of anything fun, I like a challenge. That could be fun to brainstorm off air.
Yeah, I mean, I could do a 3D printed titanium version of my Kinevo SL.
All right, back to the shock.
I think that Sid Lux is a terrible shock. I've never felt one that I liked, so I think you need to throw it away.
I've never ridden one, so I can't really, I mean, other than just like a test ride or something, which doesn't count.
I think of inline shocks, Fox makes the best inline shocks, in my opinion. So you could get the, my recommendation is going to be that, what's their Chode shock? The 29 stanchion versus the 27?
I don't know.
No clue.
I think it's just called the float. The standard float now has a fatter stanchion. It has the stanchion size of the old DPX2s, but it's an inline. Okay. So that's what the non, I think it's a standard float, and the float SL is the old original size. So I would get a standard new model, just float inline. And if you want to get a reservoir shock, that's cool too. I think they're great. I think all the Fox series stuff is fantastic. It's called the Float X now. Is that right? I really should remember all these things, but it's so funny. I'm dealing with other stuff in the bike shop world versus, like, even though I do all the ordering and all that stuff, I just, since I'm not looking and seeing at all these bikes and building new bikes all the time, I'm just a tiny bit out of the loop on that stuff, a little bit rusty. But anyway, I really like the Fox stuff personally. I do really like the new RockShox stuff in their, like, Gravity lineup. Their new coil stuff seems super nice. The new Vivid Air is freaking legit. That has some of the softest off the top I've ever felt in my entire fucking life. I really want to buy one, I think.
I like, and I know it's out of date and there's newer stuff out, but the RockShox, what was the one on my Mayhem? I can't remember which model it was. It was
Super
one of the
Deluxe.
Yeah, Super Deluxe. That was good. I liked that.
But I think you need to just drop that Sid Lux. Sorry that you already, like, got it rebuilt and paid for that, but I think that was maybe a mistake.
Yeah, I think a dongle shock is really good. I don't know. In Kentucky, you probably don't have descents long enough to get your shock heated way up. So it's probably not totally necessary, but most of the shocks that are, you know, just a little burlier than that Sid Lux are going to, you know, a lot of them are going to have the extra oil reservoir in there.
He brought up volume spacers. I think that's a very reasonable thing to look at next, but I would really just try a better, higher quality inline shock and just run it out of the gate. And then if you need to add volume spacers from there, then yeah, absolutely do that.
All right. Let's go to our next one. This is from Chris. Chris says, can Andrea spell out what our bodies actually require in a hydration mix? Any favorites of the crew? Lots of cheap generics available these days. Well, you know, I actually, after I read this, I was like, you know, I'm going to go and just look at some of the new research because my knowledge of exercise physiology is a little bit dated and I haven't kept up with everything. And from, I don't know, maybe an hour or so of looking at review articles and stuff like that, you do lose other electrolytes besides sodium and chloride, which is salt, when you are sweating. But it's so heavily weighted on salt that most of the research revolves around sodium and chloride. I mean, the lion's share of just what I read, all of the bigger studies. Now, if you're doing something that is like ultra endurance, so what I'm saying is, like, most everything doesn't really take into account, you know, it doesn't even say, like, you should replace these other things when you're exercising. So I think for most people, like, you know, if cross country racing, you know, middle length endurance type marathon stuff, just look for something that has a lot of sodium in it and, you know, add salt to your water, whatever it is. And also, like, I did read some articles about sweat testing and what the most accurate sweat tests are. And I can't remember the exact, because that's one thing in a lot of, you know, whatever you're reading, you know, if you're reading some kind of research that has anything to do with testing anything in the human body, sometimes a research study will use a test that is later found out or is not really considered a very good test. And some, you just got to like throw those out in some situations. So like testing sweat straight off of skin, like when someone is exercising, actually has a lot of, if you don't do it right, you're going to get very, just not very reliable results. So, you know, it has to do with how you clean the skin, what you use to clean the skin, if you even clean the skin. So, yeah, I saw like an ad in the past couple of days of someone doing sweat testing here at the expo in Leadville. I wouldn't really trust those results because I'm guessing they're, you know, in a outdoor environment where there's wind blowing and there's dust and things like that. The results you get from that may not be all that accurate.
If you want to hire me, I can come out to one of your races and at the end of each lap, I can lick your arm and I can let you know how it's going.
But, you know, people do lose sodium and chloride. They lose that out of their body at different rates. Some people lose more than others. If you are a pretty well-trained athlete, you've done any sort of training in the heat, you actually lose less salt in your sweat than someone who is untrained. So that's one thing to think of. The other factor is the length of your activity. Now, if you're getting into like multi-day racing, like stage racing or like these, you know, 100-mile plus races, you could reach the point of where some of those other things you lose in your sweat might start to run low and affect you. But there is not a lot of research out there that makes recommendations about what, you know, at what point those are going to run out and at what point, you know, you need to start thinking about that. And it's really just because the conditions under which you would have to test someone cannot be lab conditions. And therefore, you know, your results of testing that person's sweat at mile 200 of a bike race or a running race, they may not be very accurate. So there's not a lot out there about, you know, the other electrolytes that you lose in sweat, because it's an extremely hard thing to test for and make, you know, accurate scientific recommendations about. But just look for something that just has a lot of salt in it. You know, if you overdo it on the salt, your sweat is just going to be much more, it's going to burn your eyes more. You're going to just have a lot of extra salt like all over your jersey and helmet and everything. But it's going to help you stay hydrated in general. You do need some sugar. If you're exercising, you do need some sugar in your electrolyte drink that helps get those electrolytes in your muscles. And, you know, it helps you absorb them better out of your gut. So, you know, don't go for the no sugar stuff when you're exercising. It's, you know, and if you want some throughout the day when you're not exercising, that's, you know, it's not terrible to not have sugar, but it's not necessarily a bad thing to have sugar in your drink unless you're, you know, having problems with like insulin resistance or something like that.
You could also just run the American diet. So if you're doing Taco Bell and hot dogs, you'll probably be doing pretty good.
Yeah, you can just, you know, if you're doing a stage race, get a really salty meal after your race. Just a big ass burger and fries or some shit like that, you know.
In all seriousness, my advice would be there is so much information out there, and I'm sure some of it is right and is science-based, and other stuff is guessing, and other shit's fucking wrong. So I don't think you need to make it any more complicated than this. Try a whole bunch of different shit. Go buy a whole bunch
individually.
Go buy a whole bunch of, get one thing and run it for a week or two. Buy, you know, five or six individual packets, let's say, or just nut up and go buy a, you know, an actual bag of the mix. That's a little bit of a risk, of course. But anyway, moral of the story is try a bunch of stuff and how do you feel? It's not any more complicated than that. I think people try to make this more complicated than it needs to be. Use the stuff.
Yeah.
How does it make you feel? Does it mess with your gut during? Do you feel like freaking awesome, you know, after you have it? Or you do you feel like basically invigorated? Because I've had plenty of stuff that I've had during a ride where I'm like, man, I feel like I feel good right now. And then eat that. It's not any more complicated than that.
Yeah. And that was, you know, that was definitely a reoccurring theme in what I read, is that everyone's electrolyte loss is vastly, like, it's a huge range of what, you know, how much electrolyte you're losing when you're exercising. So, yeah, like Kenny said, just try different stuff. If you do decide that you want to get some idea of how much you're losing, it needs to be in a pretty controlled environment. Maybe not someone's like living room, possibly a training studio, but, you know, question them ahead of time of what are their techniques? You know, how do they account for, I forgot what all the variables were, but a lot of it was just air quality and what they use to clean the skin and what type of collection method they're using. Like, are they collecting sweat that's dripping off of you? Or are they putting a patch on your skin? All that kind of stuff, you know, is going to have an effect on what your results are in that type of a test.
As an example, I've tried so many different gels from every manufacturer, and most of them for me are just average. They're fine. I can tell they make a difference. They keep me from bonking, like, great. But for some reason, Goo Roctane, I notice a bigger difference when I have a Goo Roctane versus kind of your run-of-the-mill gel. Why that is, I don't exactly know.
Well, it's got some amino acids in it that do help with buffering some of your lactic acid, just to put it very, very simply.
There you go. Extremely... So maybe I like those aminos. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a good... We had a customer at the shop in Outdoors, and he described Goo Roctane. He's like, that stuff hits you like a freight train through a wet paper sack.
So, again,
it's not really,
I'm not saying...
super high caffeine either.
I'm not saying go do Goo Roctanes. Try them if you've never tried them. But just try a bunch of different shit. I try... The amount of nutrition companies that hit me up, by the way, as a buyer... is astronomical.
Crazy.
It is, yeah. Just insane. Everybody wants me to carry their damn nutrition. And most of it, honestly, when I try it, it's okay. It's fine. But it's nothing to write home about for me. It's just like, okay, that was average. It was fine.
Yep. Okay. So next question is from Emma Royds. Email on this one, I don't think is a real email. It's hemorrhoidcity@gmail.com.
I mean, that's definitely a real email. Now, is it this person's email? I don't know.
All right. This is a truck question. Are aftermarket shocks and struts like Bilstein 6112/5160 a noticeable upgrade for rough forest service roads to get to high country trailheads?
Yes.
Yes. What I noticed with mine when I upgraded mine, and that might be the combination that I have. I'm not entirely sure.
There's that one Bilstein that's like hugely popular. It's maybe one step up from the bottom of the Bilsteins. That's just like the go-to. Just get that one.
Yeah, like that's... I put that
the
on
ones
my truck.
They're talking about are reservoir shocks. If you didn't Google it, they're reservoir shocks.
Ooh, fancy.
That would be real fancy. I don't know.
I mean,
if you
why
actually
would you
need that just for forest service roads?
If you can get reservoirs, why would you get non-reservoirs?
I will say that I have like the basic Bilstein stuff on my truck, and the main thing I noticed was when you do like hit the random, like, I don't know, kind of basketball sized rock or something sticking up out of the road that doesn't really want to move, there's not as much steering deflection with those as there were with my stock ones.
God, if they made Bilsteins for my old Ridgey, I would 100% own them. They don't make jack shit for my car. It is insane. It's even hard to find just good OEM replacement stuff, which is a huge bummer. So that's why that's why I don't like a Taco, for example, is because everybody makes fucking everything for it. And by the way, that should be your life lesson on a lot of things. Sometimes you need to be a little bit vanilla because they make a lot of shit for your vanilla. So don't buy that weird ass fucking bike.
All
unless
right.
you want to be weird.
Next question. This is from, do e-bikes dream of electric marmots? I think they do. Email is riplefty@mockchicken.com. The message is Crankworks dead? Is mountain bike healing with counter events like Core Cross being set up?
I don't know. That's not the kind of mountain biking I care about. Next question.
Yeah, I enjoy slope style stuff. I like, I think competitive slope style is just such a weird genre to me. It's like the figure skating of the mountain bike world. And that's a little bit weird to me. Again, super appreciate it. I like a lot of the personalities and the shit they do is incredible. But when you try to put that into a competition format, I think sometimes stuff gets weird and maybe it makes the sport go in a weird direction. For example, like Sam Pilgrim, love the dude, like super awesome. Love his channel. He just does crazy shit and he's incredibly talented. Love it all day. But I'm not like a diehard slope style guy. So probably not the person to ask. I feel like it's about the same amount of vibe and coverage and everything as there pretty much always has been for Crankworx stuff. But maybe I'm wrong. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't watch any of that stuff, so I don't know.
Like, if you told me that Crankworx had or had not already happened, I would not know.
Now, that I have no fucking idea either. I have no idea what the schedule is. Zero idea. But I always catch, you know, cool highlights, I guess, after it happens. But that's about it.
All right. We have two other questions, and they're both a little on the long side. And I'm pretty whooped because I've been just, like, busting my ass all day. And I got to ride my e-bike back in the dark with some lights back to camp. Do we want to save them for next week?
It sounds like you've made that decision for us.
I'm just letting you know.
I think Andrea just stole Kenny's line.
All right,
you guys just, okay with that?
Yeah, just say it.
All right, I'm going to read patrons.
That's not what you say.
I'll say that after I read patrons.
Okay.
All right, so our patrons at $10 a month or more, we have John, Kurt, Jim the Fucked Up Trike Guy, Burt Reynolds Krusty Stash, Zozo, Eric, Burt Reynolds Mustache, Taper Boar Pro, My Pal Dell, MTB Shenanigans, Ray C, Mike Jones. We'll just have to deal with Matt yelling it next week. Cam Irish
Mike
One.
Jones!
Cam Sorry. Irish One, Tennessee Zach, Green Giant, AJ, Leland, subscribe to JRA OnlyFans, JC, Gordon, Josh, Fart Noises, Liz Lemon, Ryan, Bill, Aaron, Mycoxa, Floppin, Ty, Noah, Cool Beans, She Nasty, Jake D, Frank the Tank, Goat Roper, Redacted, Full Face Kenny Loggins, Flying into the Danger Zone on an Amazon e-bike at $11.11 per month, The Dewey Cox Story, Patamillan Disco Ball at 14 Australian, at $20 a month, the return of Andrea's Whore Moaning Podcast, Scott, Joe, I want a mustache ride from Burt Reynolds, Poop Wrench, Harley at 30, Andrea Knows About Shit at 31, and Six Pack Outdoors, purveyors of top shelf shenanigans and cycling events at 50. Now we should shut her down.
Bye.
Thank you all for listening, and good night.
Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along show.